Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Latest Dose, the podcast that discusses market trends, what's new in the industry, and forward-looking approaches to clinical research. Hi, I'm your host, Kathy Vandeveld, Vice President of Global Clinical Innovation at Oracle Health Sciences. The global pandemic has forever changed how we are going to engage in clinical research, whether we're a patient, site staff, sponsor, vendor, CRO, however we're going to participate. With hundreds to thousands of trials working on a treatment or prevention for this virus, it's necessary for us to embrace these positive changes that are affecting our industry. And everything rests on our need to adapt. So how do we need to think about our new normal or new normals? Today, we're going to be discussing how to get comfortable with the use of mobile technologies in clinical trials with our guest, Jennifer Golsack. She is the Executive Director of the Digital Medicine Society. Jen is also an Olympic athlete. How cool is that? And her experience in the Olympics ties into what we are here to talk about, which is biometric monitoring. Hi, Jen. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Kathy.
Oh, great to have you here. So, Jen, can you remind me how long you've been involved in clinical research?
Yeah, I've worked in clinical research for a number of years now. I started my career in healthcare on the healthcare delivery side and doing research into healthcare delivery. And then about 5 or 6 years ago now, made the transition over to the clinical trial side. I was fortunate enough to join the team at the Clinical Trials Transformation Initiative. They're a public-private partnership co-founded by the FDA and Duke University. So that's where I got my first exposure. And now I work focused exclusively on the use of digital medicine tools in clinical trials and beyond. So also in care delivery, health promotion, public health surveillance, so on and so forth.
Oh, wow. That's quite an impressive and interesting sort of transition into this particular area. So what motivated you to get involved in sort of that part of clinical development or that area of research?
So it was really interesting. Going back a little bit further, Kathy, my scientific career now is a second career after I was an athlete for many years. I was actually lucky enough to compete at the 2008 Olympic Games. And it's a curious transition for many people. You work very hard as an athlete towards this goal. You wake up every day, you try to be the best in the world at something, and then you have to find another career that challenges you in the same way. And I feel very fortunate. As I said, I worked in health research for a period of time before moving to the clinical trial side. And it's easy every day to get out of bed feeling motivated to try and deliver better care, more accessible care, more equitable care, higher quality care to folks. And then, you know, it was very much by sort of happenstance that I ended up focused on the use of digital technologies. The FDA bought the Clinical Trials Transformation Initiative a series of questions around the use of digital technologies in clinical trials almost immediately after I started. And so I got involved in it from the very beginning of my exposure to sort of clinical trials and clinical research, trying to think about the ways in which digital technologies can improve the quality and efficiency of clinical research and speed the passage of, you know, therapies that make a meaningful difference to patients, to the patients who are in need. And it's interesting. I think that there's a misconception sometimes, or perhaps people forget that the use of digital isn't a victory in and of itself, that they really are nothing more than a tool, a powerful one, but a tool that can solve sort of underlying problems and challenges around patient need, around access, around timelines, around cost. And so more technology isn't necessarily always better, but better science is always better. More patient centricity is always better. Higher efficiency is always better. And, you know, oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, I think digital technologies can really help support those end goals.
Very well said. Okay, so I was a bit distracted and awestruck by the fact that you were in the Olympics. So were biometric monitoring technologies used when you were in the Olympics?
It's so funny. We were right on the cusp of it. And I'm going to be a little bit uncouth for a moment. Typically, when I was on training camps and stuff and the run up to the Olympics, we would provide a morning sample. So we'd pee in a cup. We'd also self-report on a scale of 1 to 10, the quality of our sleep. And we would lie in bed just after we got awakened by our alarm and physically using two fingers on your neck, count your heart rate. So clearly we recognize the value of biometric monitoring. We knew that if our heart rate was drifting up, we might not be recovering. From the urine samples, we knew if our creatinine was high, we might not be recovering and we might modify our training accordingly. Just as I was retiring, they started to use things like heart rate monitors and GPS actually during a training session. And it's extraordinary now if I look back at that, sort of how novel that was, but also that the gadget is only part of it, that we would lie in bed in the morning with our fingers on our neck, taking our pulse, because the pulse reading wasn't always an important metric of recovery. We can now do it much more effectively, but we didn't necessarily pull new measures out of thin air.
Awesome. So are you a little bit sad that the Tokyo Olympics are going to be delayed?
It's exactly the right decision, but my heart goes out to all of the athletes. I think for many, it's a grueling 4-year cycle. And for a lot of people, you know, there's been injury. Many of the sports in the games, especially, aren't particularly lucrative. Folks are living sort of hand to mouth. They're putting other careers, maybe their family, on hold to do this. And I think mentally, it's been very tough for those athletes who are getting ready to be the fastest or jump the highest or the strongest that they'd ever been. And they had to sort of do a bit of a refresh. They have to be able to sort of dig back into a whole other year of training, reevaluating goals, sort of balance with other elements in life. But I will say to you, Kathy, I still have the good fortune of keeping in touch with, you know, athletes who are still competing, coaches who are still supporting athletes, national government governing bodies. Across the board, everyone agrees it was the right decision. It's just, it was a lot, I think, for the athletes, and I continue to feel for them.
And it's just so amazing how sort of this pandemic has forever changed the world and bringing it back sort of to clinical research. However, it's changed like how patients and sites and CROs, sponsors, vendors will engage in clinical research as well. But I'm hoping and I want to believe that these changes, though they've been maybe disruptive, hectic, or not wanted, sort of as you've articulated here, hopefully will at the end be positive. And maybe some of this change that you've talked about, you know, that you've been leading here, like with the biometric monitoring technologies, we can start embracing better. But how do we do that, right? Like one of the things that people talk about is regulatory is hard. And can I use this? And can I do that? So maybe you can help us explain. You've been in this space for a little while. So what is it? Every wearable device, a biometric technology, monitoring technology? Like they're not, are they? Like, can you talk, what's the difference? What's the difference between a consumer wearable and a biometric monitoring technology?
Evidence. I can answer that question. So this was something really important to us, Kathy. So when, along with a small handful of colleagues, we co-founded the Digital Medicine Society, or DIME, in the spring of 2019, we were very intentional about sort of who we wanted to be and our focus. And we went with Digital Medicine Society. And so I would offer up that there are a few different tranches of digital products that are used in and around healthcare, health research, health promotion. So digital health, I would say, is the industry writ large, that would include anything that like a telecommunications technology that you might use for a virtual visit, that would include a record keeping technology like EHR, that would include a sort of commercial sensor technology like the ones we were talking about in sport, like a heart rate monitor, so on and so forth, that would be sort of digital health. within digital health would be digital medicine. So if you almost imagine it like concentric circles, Kathy, digital medicine technologies being those high quality hardware and software tools that measure and or intervene in health. And so that could be a sort of a standalone algorithm that you run on EHR data. That's a software tool. You would expect that it has a body of evidence supporting its use and supporting its performance. You could also have a medical device that's actually intended for biometric monitoring. Interestingly, and I think this is where, you know, definitions and words matter, you can pluck a technology that was sold by the manufacturer as a digital health product, as something to support someone training for a triathlon, not intended to support a patient. And you can say, patients really like this tool. The user interface is good. The price point is terrific. We are going to build our own body of evidence to justify its use as a digital medicine tool. So at that point, you might say, so we have this, you know, activity sort of sensor. We have the step count in a commercial technology. We are going to get documentation that the sensor performs well. And that documentation would be your verification of that sensor technology and the data that flows off of it. Then you might say, well, I'm doing some research with a heart failure population. And actually what matters to them is, you know, we're interested in, you know, number of bouts of moderate to vigorous activity a day. And so we are going to develop evidence to support algorithms around that, still using an underlying technology that we bought from Best Buy. And then you have to do your clinical validation. You have to show that that measure and the algorithm that you've proven and the sensor that you've shown to be high quality actually matters to those patients. So I would say it's a really permeable sort of limit between the commercial technologies and what we might describe as a digital medicine technology. And the difference being is there evidence to say that this technology or this use is fit for purpose? It doesn't necessarily have to be the manufacturer that comes up with that body of evidence, but that would be the difference. And then the last piece in my sort of concentric circle example would be your digital therapeutics. So digital health are all sort of digital technologies and health writ large. Digital medicine are those evidence-based, high-quality hardware and or software tools that measure and intervene in health. And then there's a very specific category of digital therapeutics where the software itself is actually the intervention. And that's how I think about sort of this very, very broad, rapidly evolving industry. And I think it's helpful to help developers know what evidence they need to produce for a given use case and to help the end users, whether that's a clinician or a patient or a participant, know what evidence they should be looking for too. Tom, I'm curious to hear if that was clear and or helpful, Kathy.
So if I was to make sure I understood and to sort of say it back really, really sort of in simple terms, and tell me if this is right or wrong. So it sounds like this evidence is situational. So use fit for purpose. And so it's really important that if you had this consumer-based technology and that you needed this evidence, that it's really clear that you understand in what situation you were going to use it and that that situation was clear and that evidence really supports that situation. So you use fit for purpose. And so if I was to use different words, is that clear that it would, you know, you really have to understand that situation, which you're going to use it, and that evidence really needs to support that situation.
That's exactly right. I think it's incorrect to kind of grab a shiny gadget off the shelf and wave it around and ask if it's validated. That's not enough information and it's not the right question. What you want to know is in a given situation, in a given patient population, right, in a given context of use, can this tool perform in the way you need it to? And the tool is comprised of the sensor, the algorithm, and the clinical implications of that measure.
Yeah. One of the things I have heard people say, and I'm going to test this to see if this is true, is that consumer wearables usually, if they're used in a health situation, they're usually there to change habits, where biometrics monitoring usually is vital information used to inform healthcare providers to help you with your care. So in order to convert that consumer wearable to help with care, you have to make sure it provides the right information in the right context to turn that information into vital information. So So it's not just providing information to help change your habits. You have to convert that information into vital information. And so the only way you can do that is with evidence.
That's exactly right. And that's why I would say that barrier between, I don't know if barrier is the right word, that sort of dividing line between a digital health sort of tool and a digital medicine tool, you can use the same technology in both contexts. It's, you know, it's whether you've built, just like you said, that body of evidence that supports the quality of information. Do you have that? Can you justify it for use in providing healthcare or informing health research?
So now that we know what they need, who does this?
This is a really good question. So I think one of the things that we were chatting about, Kathy, before we recorded this was a recent publication that came out from a really fantastic group of experts at the Digital Medicine Society. So there were 16 experts from across a variety of different disciplines. So from hardware engineering all the way through to sort of wet biomarkers and also across regulatory regions that came together and said, look, we need a common framework for evaluating digital measures of health from a sensor-based technology. And there are a number of challenges on deck right now. First of all, there isn't a common unifying language across the many disciplines you have to be involved. So for example, if you say validation to a regulator, a data scientist, and a hardware engineer, they're all going to think it means something different. So until we can come to consensus around a unifying language for sort of digital health and digital medicine, we're going to be at cross purposes. And then because we see it as a collaborative endeavor, you are going to need the whole gamut of experts from engineers all the way through to clinical scientists to truly evaluate whether the tool is fit for purpose. We're going to have a sort of predefined approach for evidence. So you said, you know, whose responsibility is this? Evaluating the performance of the sensor and the data that it produces, that sort of unprocessed data, is very much the remit of, you know, engineers. That is their bread and butter. And while it might be new to those of us with a clinical background, it is incredibly well understood, and our engineering colleagues have been doing this for decades. And so they would present documentation of how the sensor performs, how it was evaluated at the bench, so on and so forth. Once we understand that the quality of that data is good, then we'd start to consider, okay, so as we move from flows of data off the sensor to an actual, you know, interpretable measure, how are we processing that data and how do we evaluate that? So you think about things like, where is the technology placed, right? So if you're interested in activity, you might be looking at something like, is it lumbar placed or wrist placed? So you have, you define the data collection protocol, and then you actually start to say, how do we develop and evaluate the algorithm and the protocol? And that's where you start to have sort of data and computer scientists really coming together with clinical researchers, behavioral scientists, physiologists, to make sure that we're getting a measure that is interpretable, even though it's coming from a raw data stream. That might happen in a lab, and there's a sort of certain set of sort of documentation that you would have to confirm that the performance of the algorithm, given a particular data collection protocol, is appropriate. And then the last piece, and I think this is why it's really helpful to make the process modular, is around, does it actually matter? And you think about clinical teams, you think about them actually saying, this is the scientific question we want to answer. Can we make the crosswalk between this measure and the fact that it matters and reflects a meaningful change to patients as we see a variance in this measure?
Can you think of examples or share examples for those that are listening to us today about where you seeing where it does matter to the patient and the clinicians, and when it doesn't matter? Do you have examples on both sides?
So I think we could probably all continue to beat up a little bit on the 6-minute walk test. I often say, you know, we should all be shot if we allow the development of digital versions of the 6-minute walk test. And I don't necessarily mean the 6-minute walk test, but we know that that is a crude measure. We know that it's one that patients tell us is not particularly important to them. And it's not really sensitive enough to sort of reflect meaningful at least this is what sort of patients tell us and many clinicians would agree. So how do we actually start to think about finding signals in the data that we can clearly translate back to patients being able to enjoy a significantly improved quality of life as a result of a change in the measure? It's almost a worry, I think, is an overstatement, but there are plenty of brilliant data scientists, for example, who can see all sorts of signals in the data. How can we make sure that we're not just fishing for signals in the data, but that we really are starting with the patient? We're starting with their unmet need for improvements in the quality of their life. We're starting with their unmet need for relief or treatment from a drug, and then start to think about how we might be able to use digital sensors as a tool to capture that in ways we haven't been able to before.
And then be able to make that more standard or more accessible or an endpoint that the regulatory authorities actually accept.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It's, you know, it's building, you know, Kathy, I think it comes back to trust, right? We talk about all this evidence, but why do we need it? We need to trust that these signals really are meaningful to the patient. We need to trust that these flows of data, these, you know, methods of, you know, sometimes passive, oftentimes continuous data capture outside of the supervision of, you know, a trials coordinator in the clinic can really be trusted to tell us whether a new therapy is working for a patient.
So then when you say, you talked about earlier that it's important to look at what information you capture, how you capture it, whether a digital health solution or approach should be used or not be used. And then it's important to how you do it. Does it have the evidence and what you choose is appropriate and so forth. So when you have a study protocol, how do you come to the decision what to use? So this is where I think people get stuck. You know, it just, there seems to be a lot of work here. You seem to need to have a lot of information. And it can get all too much. And so some people then say, well, it's just easier to do it the old way. So how do you get people through that barrier of it just gets all too much?
It's a really good question. And I think it requires a sort of a multi-pronged strategy. I think that, you know, first of all, one of the things we're trying to do at the Digital Medicine Society is make these frameworks commonly available and really trying to drive their adoption. So if, for example, we want to pursue this sort of V3 framework, as we call it, where you verify the sensor, where you do analytical validation of an algorithm, and then you do clinical validation to show that that algorithm applies in a given context of use, right? And it's meaningful. And, you know, if we're thinking about gait, for example, that it appropriately assesses what we say it is in the population of interest, you know, being able to come to agreement around what documentation looks like so that you can pick up documentation of a sensor and the unprocessed data that flows off it and say, I don't need to reinvent the wheel here. It's appropriately documented. I am confident in this documentation. I trust it, and our regulatory colleagues will trust it too, to prevent you from having to start at the beginning. I think that's really important. I think the modular approach has other benefits too. So if we think about analytical validation being the development and the documentation of a measure performing, that you could actually take that and perhaps try and apply it to a new patient population and see if it holds up. That would require you only doing clinical validation. If you can show that that measure can be clinically validated in a new context of use, you don't have to go back to the top of the list. You don't have to start with a sensor. You don't have to develop the measure from scratch. And so I think a couple of things are necessary. I think broad acceptance of the right process for developing and evaluating these measures. I think embracing a modular approach that allows you to plug and play a little bit across technology, across measure, across context of use. And I also think, and this is something we're actually working on now at the Digital Medicine Society, is how can we standardize the way that we report these studies so that if you went to the literature and you found some analytical validation studies of a given algorithm and it was open source, you could confidently pick it up, knowing that you had sufficient documentation and sufficient trust to simply try and apply it in your own clinical population. So I think it really comes down to sort of broad acceptance and standards around what the process is and how to report it, so that everyone isn't trying to do this as an army of one, that we can actually build a broad shared sort of repository of knowledge that we can draw on and modify as needed.
So is the V3 framework, as you have referred to it as, so the various verification validation steps that you have outlined, is that something that the regulatory authorities here in the United States, in Europe, in Japan would recognize?
So I certainly can't speak for our regulatory colleagues, but I can share that FNIH's biomarkers consortium, just before everything shut down for COVID, hosted an absolutely phenomenal two-day workshop on digital measurement in clinical trials in February of this year, so February 2020. And we discussed the V3 framework there. And while I certainly can't say it's been sort of fully endorsed, that would be me overstating, we had terrific open conversations with regulatory colleagues from both FDA and EMA. And what they liked about this work that we had done was that we'd drawn on language that is acceptable and makes sense to all of the different sort of disciplinary stakeholders. It also really helps because it helps you identify who you need to be talking to within a given regulatory authority at any given time. So for example, if you have documentation or if you have questions around the actual sensor technology, we know that that's part of verification, and that will help you find the right engineers at FDA, for example. At the other end of the spectrum, if you're a little bit further along in the development process, you're confident in the tool you want to use, you think the algorithm's strong, and you're really thinking about redeploying a digital measure or a biometric monitoring technology in a new context of use. So if you're working on clinical validation, it helps you find the right expert. So it was really well received, and we talked about at length. And as I said, one of the things or two of the things that we came away with was having this unifying language and this common framework and the ability to help identify who from regulatory authorities you might want to be talking to at each stage in the process.
That's awesome. That's great news. That is awesome. So let's say you have an individual or a study team or an organization that is desiring to incorporate their digital wearables sensors into their clinical development program. They have 3 to 12 months. What is the step they should take? Listening to this, they've turned this on and they're now at the, which step should they take? Because their protocol is going to start somewhere between 3 to 12 months.
Yeah. So I think the first thing to do is check. There are two resources that I would recommend that everyone looks at before diving in. So the first, at Dyme, we have a crowdsourced library of digital endpoints currently being used in industry-sponsored studies of new medical products. Right now, we've got 55 unique endpoints in that library where, you know, somewhere in phase 1 to 4, some measurements even being sort of primary endpoints are already being used. And I would suggest that folks start there to see what work has already been done and where there's already precedence for using a digital measure in an industry-sponsored trial of a new medical product. I would also suggest that they take a look at CITI's feasibility study database there, because feasibility studies are obviously a lot more commonplace. I think they have, crikey, over 500 now searchable studies of digital measurement technologies that are being sort of evaluated in different ways. They might be proof of concept. They might be looking at sort of data quality, so on and so forth. But there, you know, that literature is archived, tagged and searchable. And so I think, you know, going back to this concept of not having to reinvent the wheel every time, going out and what is investigating what's already being used, and where you might be able to build on the documentation of other colleagues in the field would be a great start, especially if you're on a short timeline. And then I think it's really thinking about what are the things you want to measure that you're expecting to see a response in that patients tell you are important. And I would say it's not a de facto decision that you should use digital or a sensor technology. There are certainly things that sensors can capture that we haven't been able to before, but they're not always going to be the better decision. Sometimes you might want to do an EPRO. Sometimes you might need to bring the participant in for a scan. So always looking for those unique benefits that you can derive from a digital measure before embarking on it. You know, you want to set yourself up for success. And then I would say work through the V3 process. We developed it very intentionally to be broadly applicable, to be modular, to help you have those early and often conversations with regulatory colleagues, working through verification of the sensor, analytical validation of the algorithm, and then clinical validation of its application to your patient population.
Okay, so three follow-up questions. Where do you find the DIME information?
Yep. So our website is dimesociety.org, and you can find the endpoints library there. It's an Airtable. It's very friendly, very searchable. And of course, if there's anything we've missed, it's crowdsourced. You can add that. We'll check it and then add that to our repository. And then city? You have two other questions.
Okay, city. So that would stand for Clinical Trial Transformation Initiative feasibility. So where would you find that? Do you know that answer or should we follow up with that?
You would go to the city website, which is city-clinicaltrials.org. And I believe that you can navigate to it from their homepage.
And then where would they find V3?
So V3 is a publication in Nature Digital Medicine. We point to it on the DIME website in our DIME generated content, but it's also there on the NPJ Digital Medicine website. I was fortunate enough to be first author on that paper along with 15 phenomenal colleagues. So a couple of ways of getting that, and I'm happy to send you these links as well in case you want to post them with the podcast, Kathy.
Okay, well, thank you very much. So Jennifer Goldsack, Jen, thank you so much for sharing this information with us today. And hopefully I got very much great information out of this and really appreciate you taking the time and providing the advice and sharing all that you've done to help improve our ability to be able to use these technologies and biometric monitoring in clinical research. Appreciate all your efforts, all your leadership in this space. Thank you for helping us to get further along. And any final words before we go?
No, this is fantastic. This is, you know, being able to sort of spread the word about this is exactly why we exist, bringing these different disciplines together, coming up with common frameworks, and then, you know, trying to support folks in deploying them to make the transition to sort of more digital, more decentralized approaches as painless as possible. So this is always a fun one for me to talk about, Kathy, and thank you for being a great host today.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Latest Dose. To discuss market trends, what's new in the industry, and forward-looking approaches for clinical research. Before you go, show us some love by subscribing and make sure you join us next month.